Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're talking trade, with many people around the world talking up the prospects of a trade war given the moves from Washington DC of late. We thought the time was right to address the theme of international trade more broadly, putting front and centre a reminder of exactly why free trade is good for the economy. We'll focus, understandably given recent moves, on the United States, but we'll also take the global temperature and compare and contrast some protectionist policies around the world. We start with Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist at UBS Wealth Management. Paul, there's been an understandable focus on trade and trade wars, given some of what we've seen and heard from Donald Trump. Maybe you can take us back, if you like. Why is free trade good for the economy? Why is that the received wisdom amongst economists like yourself, Paul?
Well, the idea of free trade is basically making things where it makes most sense. So you try and be as efficient as possible. And different countries have different specializations and different areas where they are going to be efficient because of natural resources, because of the skills of their population. So if you're producing goods as efficiently as possible as a planet, that's going to bring multiple benefits. It means that goods will be as cheap as is possible, which means that consumers can have a better standard of living. And it means, of course, that the resources of the planet, the environmental issues, will be also as efficient as possible. So basically, global trade is all about making the world a more efficient place with a higher standard of living and fewer negative environmental consequences.
Now, recent narratives out of the Oval Office explain why we're looking at this week. But to you next, Chris Swan, cross-asset strategist at UBS. How would you sum up why free trade matters, why it's good for the economy? Is it a good moment to be asking that?
Well, it does seem to have fallen somewhat out of focus. But obviously, the advantages of free trade are that each nation can focus on the goods and services that they produce most efficiently. Overall, it lowers the costs to consumers and results in greater productivity, greater economic efficiency. It's universally viewed by most economists as a positive for global growth. Of course, the trouble is it can selectively produce losers. And the only question is, how do you deal with that? Is it better to sort of throw the baby out with the bathwater or to focus on policies within a country that compensate those who maybe suffer transitional difficulties on the basis of free trade? And that's really been one of the dominant debates over the past few years.
Brian Rose is Senior Economist Americas in the UBS Wealth Management CIO. Brian, can you remind us why free trade is essentially a good thing?
Well, one way to think about trade is just that, like everything else you do in your life, people specialize in certain areas. So, you know, most people, they don't fix their own car. They don't build their own house. They don't farm their own food. You have professionals or specialists in each area. And you trade whatever job you happen to be doing for the services of the other professionals who are doing their specialty. And there doesn't make much difference whether the service or goods are produced in your own country or somewhere else. There's just a huge advantage to not doing everything yourself. And I think this is the big picture on free trade, is that everyone is better off if you have free trade.
So why has this established rationale come under pressure? Is it from the political realm, Paul Donovan? What's driving the challenge to the status quo?
Right from the word go, international trade has had one big problem. And that problem is that the benefits of trade are very, very broad, but actually quite shallow, whereas the costs of free trade are narrow, but they fall very deeply. So if we look at the United States today, Mr. Trump is proposing to tax consumers of foreign aluminium. What does that mean? Well, that means that for an American going out to buy a six-pack of Budweiser beer, they'll probably end up having to pay 6 cents more because the aluminium tariff or tax is likely to add 1 cent a can to the price of the aluminium being used. Now, that's a small cost, but lots and lots and lots of people are facing that cost. On the other hand, by imposing a tax on foreign aluminium, Mr. Trump is hoping to be able to benefit the jobs of people who work in the industry. And when he signed the tax executive order, he was surrounded by steel workers. And it's a very visual image that these people's livelihoods are at risk. Now, we don't want to diminish the importance of people being able to work and achieve a decent wage. But in the grand scheme of things, the damage that is done to lots and lots of people in a very small way is actually larger than the benefit that accrues to a small number of people. So the problem of trade is that a lot of the benefits aren't especially visible, and the costs of free trade make for better television.
Still to come on The Bulletin with UBS, we'll take a global perspective on protectionism, and we'll ponder what, if anything, might keep the US president in check when it comes to restrictions on trade. Although Trump has clearly been much more aggressive on trade of late, Europe as a bloc and China are arguably more protectionist. So while the US may be going the wrong way, in our view, Paul Donovan, are the EU and China equally or more guilty in this regard?
I think it's fair to say that China certainly clearly has a very obviously more protectionist agenda. It's also fair to say, of course, that China is an emerging economy. It's not a highly developed economy at this stage. And in emerging economies, there are a lot more political issues. The negative consequences of getting things wrong can be a lot more severe. It tends to be more common to have this sort of level of protection in emerging economies. The issue with Europe is somewhat more controversial. So whilst we have obvious issues like tariffs, which is a formal tax on consumption of foreign product, there are other issues which are a little bit vaguer, like standards. So, for example, a ban on genetically modified food imports. Now, a European might say, well, this is nothing to do with trade. We don't want anybody's genetically modified food imports, foreign or domestic. But the American farmer will say, well, we produce genetically modified food and you're stopping us from selling it. So there becomes a rather more complicated issue, which is why trade is such a vexed topic overall.
Despite the excesses then of the Trump administration, Europe as a bloc and China are arguably more protectionist. Is that fair, Brian Rose?
Well, certainly the US would argue that. There are no purists in terms of trade, so every country has their own industries that they're trying to protect. So the issue for US is just that we've been running very, very large trade deficits for a long time, and there are a lot of macroeconomic reasons for that that go beyond the protectionist measures. But it does, from a populist point of view, it makes it easy for President Trump to argue, hey, look, we're being ripped off. Other people are being unfair. That's why we're running such large trade deficits. So that's what gives him the political support to take a trade action.
And just on China, there's another interesting facet here, isn't there, Brian Rose? And it's regarding intellectual property practices.
I'd say the one thing that we're most interested in is the potential for tariffs in retaliation for Chinese intellectual property practices. And unlike steel and aluminum, I think there's been a lot of complaints about Chinese intellectual property practices. This is something that would get more political support both here and overseas. So this is the sort of next step that we're waiting to see. What sort of action do they propose in this area?
Chris Swan, I wanted to ask you next, what keeps Trump in check? Can commercial interests do it? Can big importers shape or reshape perhaps the Trump attitude to trade?
There are a couple of potential constraints. So there's a very important pro-free trade wing within the Republican Party, and we've already seen them pushing back. So within the administration, there's Gary Cohen, who, unfortunately for pro-free trade advocates, left the administration. That was seen by many in the markets as a setback. You've also had pro-free trade sounds from Paul Ryan and also some top senators. So there's clearly a very important wing within the Republican Party. And if you have very politically targeted, skillfully targeted a response from the European Union, that could also tilt the political balance. But as you say, that there's also powerful lobbying within industry. And one of Gary Cohen's last acts as an economic advisor to Trump was to arrange a meeting with prominent steel consuming firms who are obviously going to lose out from this. And the main historical analogy here would be that the Obama administration imposed tariffs on tires in September 2009. And an analysis by the Peterson Institute in Washington calculated that this saved a maximum of 1,200 jobs, but at a cost of 900,000 per job for US consumers in terms of higher prices and other economic effects.
Paul Donovan, what in your view can keep Trump in check? There's a pro-trade wing within the GOP, but we've seen Gary Cohen going, for example. What kind of influence does this faction, this pro-trade faction, have, and can they wield it effectively?
Well, one of the issues when it comes to trade and trade protectionism in the United States is that the US president has almost dictatorial powers when it comes to creating tariffs or ending trade agreements. There are lots and lots of pieces of legislation which have given the president considerable authority to raise taxes on anybody he likes, as long as they're foreign, and to tear up trade treaties by a tweet overnight, if that's what he wants to do. So there's a lot of power in the president which limits the ability of other people to check what is going on. But I think there's one thing which probably limits the idea of a trade war developing. The taxes that Mr. Trump has imposed so far on imports of washing machines, on imports of solar panels, and now on imports of steel and aluminium, these are taxes that the American consumer ultimately ends up paying. But the thing is, they don't realize that they're paying them. I mean, let's face it, you don't buy a washing machine, you know, every week. You buy a washing machine maybe every 5 or 6 years. And so the consumer doesn't really remember the price of the washing machine they bought 5 years ago. And so the fact that their new washing machine has got a Trump tax on it, they don't recognize. So they're not responding to it. But if Mr. Trump were to further expand the taxes on foreign goods coming into the United States, perhaps looking at consumer electronics or food or clothing, those are things that consumers buy on a regular basis, and those are areas where a tax increase in the form of a tariff would be very visible to the US consumer. And in that circumstance, I think the consumer would start to become a lot more hostile to Mr. Trump's consumer tax policy.
Brian Rose, to you next. What do you think keeps Trump in check? There is this pro-trade wing within the GOP, of course, as we've been hearing.
So the president does have broad powers in trade policy. But as we've seen since the announcement that they're planning to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum, there's a very strong pushback. Most of that is from Trump's own Republican party. But basically, the business interests who would be hurt by these tariffs are pushing back. And you see already, it seems... You know, the Trump administration may be altering their policy. At first they said there would be no exceptions. Now it seems maybe there will be some exceptions. Maybe this won't be done across the board, especially our allies may not have the tariffs imposed, or maybe at least for certain products, which the U.S. has a very little production capacity, you'll see those tariffs waived. Even though Trump has the ability to impose the tariffs politically, we may see some adjustment.
Finally on the programme, can I just ask you, Paul Donovan, briefly about the recent signing of the restructured TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, of course. What's the takeaway from this other significant move that we've seen in the last few days?
The TPP shows, I think, a commitment to countries working together to cooperate, and it shows that countries do understand that there is a benefit from trying to limit restrictions and trade barriers between one another. But the TPP is not exactly a free trade agreement. It's what an economist would call a preferential trade agreement. That means that as long as you're inside the TPP, life's great because it's become easier to trade with your fellow TPP members. But if you're outside the TPP, or indeed if you're like America, who has voluntarily chosen not to sign the agreement, then you're going to find it more difficult to trade with TPP countries. Because as that group of 11 countries lower barriers amongst themselves, it makes their own goods more attractive to one another. And conversely, of course, it makes US or European goods less attractive to people who have signed up to the TPP.
And that's Paul Donovan bringing us to the end of this 179th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at the website monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.